Say hello on Twitter at Richard Serrett. S-Y because I love you, R-E-double-T. Hey, there's a really strange mystery noise case coming out of Canada. Have you heard about this? This man has been tormented by a persistent humming sound for over a decade, and it has seemingly followed him from one home to the next. The extraordinary story of Dana Negre reportedly began back in 2008 when he noticed an odd sound that he likened to a locomotive diesel engine idling in the distance, which never stopped. Fortunately for him, there were others in his community who also heard the continuous hum, and the search for the source became a brief media sensation that ultimately proved futile. His experience with what has come to be called the Richmond Hum ended 4 years later when Negre moved nearly 200 miles away to the city of Edmonton. However, much to his consternation, the beleaguered man's story soon took a maddening turn when he settled into his new home and, like a scene from a horror film, he heard the sound once more. Musing him to himself, oh no, here we go again, Negre set out to solve the mystery of the hum once and for all. You can read all about it up at the carousel at coasttocoastam.com. Back to more of my conversation with the founder of the Church of Perpetual Life, plus your questions and comments right here on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast AM. Richard Serrett coming to you from Coast Toronto Canada affiliate In-Depth Radio News Talk 1010. And Bill Falloon joins us from Fort Lauderdale, Florida. He is the director of the Life Extension Foundation, a consumer advocacy organization that funds research and disseminates information to consumers about optimal health. And he is also the founder of the Church of Perpetual Life. We are talking about dramatic life extension and perhaps even one day immortality. And we will also, we've also opened up the phone lines. We'll take your questions and comments before we get to that. Let me ask you about some more ethical questions.
Sure.
And what happens when this technology first becomes available? It's, as in most cases with advances, technological advances, it begins to, as something that is out of the reach of most people economically. It is very, very, very expensive in the short term.
The eventually, we have, and the good news is most of the interventions cost very little, especially if you import some of them from other countries where prescription drugs cost a fraction of what they do in the United States. Metformin, people are buying that for $5 to $10 a month. In some cases, their insurance covers 100% of it. And some of the other interventions are very affordable. Some of them cost a little bit more. And of course, healthy young plasma, that is expensive. But we're looking at these stem cell exosomes as potentially something that can be very efficiently manufactured so that large-scale production can be done. So in the beginning, for everything that we identify that works, it might be costly for some people. I'm pretty sure prices will plummet because we're not patenting anything. We're open sourcing everything that we're doing. We're letting people know what results we're getting, what dosing recommendations that we have. So we're going the opposite of what Big Pharma does. We are letting the world know what we're doing on a research basis, what results we're seeing, and then how you can emulate what we're doing in the research setting in your own personal program.
But I'm talking about in the not too distant future when we're talking about essentially re-sleeving human consciousness into, you know, a body that you can regrow and rejuvenate. Those types of interventions could be very expensive. And so what I'm seeing is sort of the haves and the have-nots, those that get to live very long and those who do not.
Well, if a drug company develops something, it's going to be expensive, and Big Pharma is putting big money into anti-aging research. Google has partnered with a company called AbbVie, put in $1.5 billion to develop anti-aging drugs. They expect those to be ready in 9 years. They're going to be very expensive. We are trying to circumvent that by accelerating our own research and identifying what works that people can afford. But you're correct. If a big drug company comes up with something, it's going to be costly. We don't like that. We're a consumer-based organization. We're trying to enable as many people to live as long as possible.
Well, I might be paranoid, but the way I sort of perceive the way the world works, we have some elites out there who, and many of them are very interested in achieving immortality, but they don't want that held out for the rest of us. In fact, they want it for the few, and the rest of us, the idea of us hanging around and consuming more of what they perceive to be their resources does not sit well with them. So can you foresee a potential battle between the elites who would like to covet this kind of technology for themselves and deny it to the rest of us?
Oh, I can't tell you how that could play out, because I can't tell you who's going to be the one that develops the true medication that cures aging. And I don't think it's going to be a single drug. I think it's going to be a multimodal intervention. But I do understand what you're saying. And then the good news is there are a number of nonprofit organizations pursuing age reversal research. And we share information openly. No one is keeping it secret. Now, the big drug companies, they're doing their own work, but we're emulating a lot of what they're doing in far less costly ways. So I can see it being something where maybe in the beginning, drug company comes out with something, cost a fortune, and we tell people, you can probably buy this in Europe for a fraction of the price, and that's where people go to get it. There could be all kind of ways to circumvent the concerns that you have. And I agree, there could be that scenario play out. And I want you to know we'll be on the front lines battling it. We've been doing that, fighting the FDA and Big Pharma since 1980, and we're never going to stop.
Charles is in Elgin, Texas, on the Wild Card Line. Charles, good evening, good morning. Welcome to Coast.
Yep, good morning. Let's see. My question is, what kind of learning systems or approaches to learning for a future where people are going to be living into their hundreds are being looked into? I'm particularly thinking about a system that was developed a while ago, but it certainly, I always thought it had good future, good potential for the future, which is called the Reservopedia now, I think. And I think the basis for it is very good. And I wondered what's going to be looking into, because otherwise, it just doesn't seem like people are going to be really ready.
And I agree with you, and here's the beautiful part of it. Uploading of information directly into your brain, just like you pull out your smartphone, which, by the way, in 2007, the CEO of Microsoft thought no one would want to have a smartphone, so they didn't pursue it right away. He was wrong. But you will literally wake up with all of the knowledge inserted into your brain, accessible through an indexing system. This mind uploading is a concept that brilliant people are working on. I'm not part of those groups, by the way, but I hear about their research, and you will have an incredible ability to learn and know the truth about virtually every aspect of life, because it'll be instantly implanted every morning if you choose to. Just the way that you'll look at your smartphone to read the news, which is a lot more efficient than the newspaper, you'll have it uploaded. So it's going to be a fantastic future.
Isn't that sort of trying to guarantee outcomes? Because everyone will be on an equal footing, and
well,
people are not.
And then we'll have to be able to figure out who we can trust and who we can't. But I'm able to look at certain published scientific articles and see who the authors are, and I can recall maybe interacting with them at a scientific conference. So if they did a study and published results, and I have a good knowledge base about their credibility, I'm going to give that published study a lot more attention than I would if it's somebody who maybe did not impress me.
Right. Oh, that's another great...
And they weren't looking to save human life.
Oh, no, that's another great area. That's another interesting question. But I was asking about, if you're uploading all of mankind's accumulated knowledge to everyone, rather than people having to actually, sit down, learn how to write, struggle with concepts and so forth, you're guaranteeing outcomes.
That's what I'm hoping. I'm looking
well,
for the future.
But guaranteeing outcomes to me is somewhat problematic. I mean, that's kind of a Marxist or a socialist kind of a worldview, isn't it? If you're guaranteeing outcomes, everyone will be equal.
Now, if we want to spend the time, there's a number of databases that are independent, and you can review clinical studies on a wide range of topics and formulate your own conclusion. So you're not really guaranteeing the outcome. You're guaranteeing everyone equal access to a wide variety of information, and then they can choose what they believe to be the truth and what may be false. But we at least have access to a lot more data as opposed to sometimes what's very limited today.
Right. Well, yes, access to the data, sure. But if you're uploading it directly into the human mind so that everyone has that and they can retain it and recall it, That's a different matter. However, the other issue that you brought up, which I think is an important one, is if we have somebody responsible for uploading information directly into the brain, who is going to vet that? Who is going to be the arbiter of what is truth and what is not and what gets uploaded and what doesn't?
Well, look at what we're doing now. When we started our life extension group, we would go to the university medical library and spend days there, painstakingly going through the Index Medicus, which was the reference to find medical articles, and then photocopying those articles, bringing them home, and reading them all night long. And now we wake up, we can go to PubMed.gov, which is one of the few things the federal government does that I think benefits people, and that's a database of all the published studies around the world on medicine and biotechnology. And you type in search terms, and you can read the findings of published studies. But you, the person, makes the decision as to what you feel is valid and reasonable. So I'm looking at uploading the data, not necessarily the programming of how your brain reacts to it.
Walt is in Allentown, Pennsylvania. Walt, good morning, good evening. Welcome to Coast.
Happy birthday, Richard.
Thank you, my friend.
I'm guessing you're about 55, plus or
minus. You win the lottery, my friend. I have no prizes, but thank you.
Well, yeah, interesting conversation. Philosophically, you might say that life is a slow death. Now, I think I think that genetics is still the most important factor in longevity. As your guest undoubtedly knows, there's a genetic anomaly called the progeria, where it causes you to age at an accelerated rate. I remember Phil Donahue back in the late 60s, he would have these kids on like they were 7, 8 years old, and they had the body of an 80 or a 90-year-old man or woman. So I think that illustrates that genetics is still, the most important factor. I'm not saying that a good diet and whatnot, isn't conducive to longevity, but I think it's still genetics primarily.
You're 100% correct. However, a good diet facilitates healthy gene expression. So if you abuse your body, you're going to injure your genes and you're going to develop diseases prematurely. And progeria is a wonderful example from the standpoint that aging, it occurs at different rates. And these poor progeria children, they die typically around the age of 13 or 14. They have severe atherosclerosis and dementia. They suffer terribly, and they just don't live as long as we do. You look at 1900, people lived an average age of about 47. We now live to be over 80 if we take care of ourselves. So we're expanding the lifespan, and genetics ultimately will be the cure for aging. And Harvard professors are working on CRISPR-Cas9 gene editing technology in a way that they believe they will have a cure for human aging within the next 10 years.
The next 10 years.
I think the CRISPR-Cas9 must be done in the very beginning. It has to be done in conjunction with cloning. Because, you have to change the genetics of every cell in the body. You can't have a group of cells in the body with the one DNA and having a whole other group with another DNA.
That's correct. And what they're doing at Harvard, they're going to take a group of 12-year-old dogs and see if they cannot reverse the aging process. They plan to do that in the next 12 months, from what I understand. And if it works in dogs, one of the scientists said he's going to try it on himself, which is something I wouldn't do, frankly. If you can believe it or not, I do almost everything else. But I'd rather see it done on more animals first. But yeah, we're going to have to
engineer
the genes of every cell in our body in order to restore our youth fully.
Well, thank you. What about boredom? And if you live 200, 300, 400 years, and you've been everywhere twice, you've seen the ice capades 100,000 times. Isn't there a point where you just say, I've done it all, I've seen it all, I am bored?
I read about 30 medical journals in a given day or two, and I wished I could read 300, 3,000. There's no limit to how much enjoyment I can get out of finding out new information. So for me, boredom has never been an issue. I don't perceive it ever will be. The scientific journals reveal new information every single day. And when you tie in that information with information you've already garnered from another source, you find ways to better treat diseases.
Okay, how about this? Now, I know people that are in their 90s, and they're healthy, but they're sad. They're sad because everyone they know is gone, and they miss them. So what happens to somebody, and they're 200, 300 years old, and and maybe most of their friends decided they didn't want to go that route or couldn't afford it or what have you, they're gone. And maybe even your children and your grandchildren and your great-grandchildren are gone.
Well, that's a realistic problem that we're faced with today. A lot of people over the age of 80 and 90 have lost virtually everyone, and older people just don't make social connections the way younger people do. We're looking at taking a 90-year-old and restoring their youth. And young people, they readily make social networking connections. It's very easy to start another family if you're young again. The problem is they're suffering so much depression. Mental depression goes along with normal aging. They're suffering physical debilities. It's really hard for them to think about entering into new social relationships. But if we reverse aging, restore youthful energy levels, well, they can start everything fresh.
What about jobs? We have millennials complain that boomers are, they're retiring later and later, and they're hanging on to those coveted positions. Isn't dramatic life extension only going to dramatically intensify this problem?
No, it's not. The technology advances are going to reduce the need for people to work as many hours. And what you just mentioned about people working longer, that's because they're healthier. You've got people running for president who are over 70, and we don't think they're too old anymore. If you remember Ronald Reagan, when he was 69, a lot of people felt that he was just too old to be president. And Lyndon Johnson, when he was 59, he checked out. He said, I'm going to run for re-election, because he had severe coronary artery disease. They had no treatments for it back in 1968, and he wound up dying a few years later. So these people who are working longer into their careers are evidence that we really are slowing down aging. But as it relates to millennials getting jobs, I think there's more jobs out there than there are people who can fill them. I don't perceive that as being a problem, at least in today's economy.
But there are many people who work past the retirement age of 65 because they have to. Most people simply can't afford to retire. And if we're going to live to 200, 300, 400, we're going to run out, our 401ks are going to run out long before our lives do.
Well, that's true. And what we tell all of our supporters is never retire. And the reason is your brain will atrophy. It literally shrinks within 12 months of you not working your job, and just sitting around watching TV and not paying attention. You'll lose your brain. You'll lose your mental capacities. So the idea of stopping work and doing nothing else is a way to accelerate aging. Should not happen. We tell everybody, do something mentally, exercise your brain the way you do your body.
All right, hold on, Bill. We'll circle back and dip into the phone lines again and address more ethical issues. Who wants to live forever? Here's Dan Mangan and Troubled Mind, based in Vancouver, British Columbia. He's got two major Canadian Juno Music Awards to his credit. Back with more on Coast to Coast AM. Immortality may be within our grasp. One of the most cherished science fiction scenarios is using a black hole as a portal to another dimension or time or universe. And that fantasy may be closer to reality also than previously imagined. And you can read all about how rotating black holes may serve as gentle portals for hyperspace travel. And our webmaster tonight, Sean Latisor, has posted that in the In the News section at coasttocoastam.com. Back to more of my conversation with the founder of the Church of Perpetual Life and the quest for immortality right here on Coast to Coast AM. Just a reminder, coming up at the top of the hour, Andrew Collins, the man who discovered a massive cave complex beneath the pyramids of Giza, will be here to discuss the Cygnus Key, the Denisovan legacy, Göbekli Tepe, and the birth of Egypt. How's that? Is that any good? I think so. That's coming up, as I say, the top of the hour. But to get us to there, we continue along with the founder of the Church of Perpetual Life, Bill Falloon, and your phone calls as we continue to delve into dramatic life extension and even immortality. Let's go west of the Rockies. Sean is in Tuscaloosa. Sean, welcome.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm in Alabama. I called the wrong number. But first, I have a comment. A lot of the questions and political ramifications are brought up a lot in Methuselah's Children by Robert Heinlein.
Yes.
And in Elizabeth Moon's Toronto Legacy. But my question is, how much research have you put into fixing transcription errors that are caused by cellular mitosis? Because if you change too much the DNA, then other symptoms will end up cropping up over time, something that you may not even have a clue about.
Well, that's always a risk. We look at as much as we can afford to look at as it relates to electron microscopy. But the idea is, if we can take an animal and rejuvenate it in the laboratory and enable that animal to live, let's say, 36% longer, which is what some Mayo Clinic researchers did and published last July 2018. They gave a nutrient called quercetin. You can buy that anywhere in a health food store, and a drug called dasatinib that removed the senescent cells from their body. And in doing so, old animals grew younger and they lived longer. So while we may not have all of the data we'd like to when we see older animals being rejuvenated, and then we see people doing it and getting some of the benefits like we saw in the animal model, we're pretty happy at that stage.
Sean, thanks for the call. I want to move quickly. We have a lot of people waiting east of the Rockies. I should have known Tuscaloosa, not west of the Rockies, but there it is. Anyway, east of the Rockies. I'm going to hear about it on Twitter. I guarantee it. East of the Rockies. Sheila is in Agawam, Massachusetts. Sheila, welcome to Coast AM.
Yeah, hi. Thanks so much. I just wanted to let you guys know it's possible that the Bible does have a prediction for a future of longevity. And just one verse found in the book of Revelation, it says, during those days, people will seek death but will not find it. They will long to die, but death will elude them.
That's ah, great. Fascinating. What do you make of that, Bill?
I appreciate hearing it.
Yeah, that's it. Any other further comments?
I don't know how to comment any further.
All right, fair enough. Thanks, Sheila, for bringing that to our attention. Let's see. Let's go to the first-time caller line. Joseph is in Sterling Heights, Michigan. Joseph, good morning. Welcome to Coast AM.
Yes, good morning. I have a question. Back in the early 80s, Genome Sciences developed a way to lengthen the tolerant, and the president, I believe at the time, was George Bush, and they put a stop to it because they were using fetal mutilization to grow these stem cells or whatever it was to make the tolerant extend. And I also understand Mike West, who was, I think, the CEO of Genome Sciences at the time, they had taken these children that were aging, in advanced aging, and they were able to reverse their aging process. So I'm just wondering where that research is today. And
I think some of that early research did not pan out the way they had hoped to. The Geron Corporation raised a lot of money, did a lot of commercial research, and they did not get the results we had hoped for. Mike West is working hard. I appreciate what he's doing. But what we're doing at our age reversal group is we're looking at the animal studies, and if old animals are growing younger by using a certain drug or intervention, we're testing it on people like me who are willing to self-experiment. And if we start growing younger, we then let people know about that on our website. So we are able to at least convey what we're seeing in real time. We're not holding anything back. We're not applying for patents. We just want to see something work and get as many other people to test it who want to test it and report back to us and also send us their blood test results. We'd love to get baseline blood test results, and a person undergoes a series of interventions, some of which cost very little, and then we see their blood markers improve.
Joseph, thank you for the call. West, or the wildcard line, and Terry is in British Columbia. Terry, good morning.
Evening, gentlemen. What a fascinating conversation we're having here tonight. Mr. Falloon, I'm deeply impressed with your drive and your intelligence. I first heard about life extension in my 20s, in the 1970s, and I thought, what a cool thing. At 67, I'm thinking, this sounds like spiritual sleep deprivation to me. And what about
spiritual sleep deprivation? That's an interesting term. What do you mean by that?
Well,
spiritual sleep deprivation.
What about the wisdom factor where, you know, I've had a rich, full life, and, man, I've been able to clean out a lot of the chaff. And, I think if I knew I had to live for another 100 years, I'd be looking for a cave to get away from the younger ones.
Well, these are personal preferences. The group that I'm associated with, we want to live a real long time. If you don't, that's your choice. It's your prerogative. But I appreciate the fact, you know, we've been around since the 1970s, and what we succeeded in doing is delaying aging. It wasn't until 2014 where we started to see it go in reverse. And this is truly a biomedical renaissance. Those who want to jump on board are welcome to, and others, it's an individual preference.
But Terry, thank you for the call. And I think he raises an interesting point. And here's another scenario. You know, that old saying that you get old, you get wiser with age, that's not necessarily true. And just because people live a lot longer doesn't necessarily mean society is going to get any better. In other words, doesn't mean we're going to behave any better. Do you really want to live to see things, at least in terms of societal breakdown, go south?
Oh, I think we're going to behave much better. Older people have figured it out for the most part. And yes, they sometimes have some mental health issues, but at the same time, they've got a tremendous amount of accumulated wisdom. And you don't see older people robbing banks and doing some of the horrific street crimes that teenagers and adolescents wind up doing because they're just too young and ignorant to know any better. So an incredible population of wise people, I think, will only benefit society.
But it crime statistics, you're right. It's all about demographics. It has far less to do with things like poverty and everything, I think, almost to do with demographics. So as people get older, you're right, violent crime decreases, but then things like white crime, it's white collar crime, rather. It has to do with physical limitations, doesn't it? So, but if you're still able...
Older people don't usually engage in white collar crime because they understand what the risk is. People at younger ages are willing to assume risks even when they have terrible ethical issues associated with them. But as people mature, I think they do get better. That's been my observation, and I've dealt with a lot of people over a lot of decades. And what I regret is a lot of them aren't around anymore, which is why I don't stop working.
All right. I hope you're right on that score. Roberta is in Texas. Welcome to Coast AM, Roberta. Are you there, Roberta? In the great state of Texas, we're looking for Roberta. Roberta is gone. All right. But not forgotten. Let's say hi to Jan in Brooklyn, New York. Jan, welcome to Coast.
I'm here. Hi.
Welcome aboard.
Listen, I'm actually horrified. I want to comment about this, about the food we eat. I mean, the GMOs, there's no energy in the food. It tastes terrible. And the food that comes from other countries, they beam frequencies at it to kill the germs, but they also kill the food, and the food is like dead. Because I pick up energy, and there's no energy in most of the food. I go crazy trying to find good food, even from the health food store, and you find the pesticides on them. And, I mean, there's also, you could use LED lights and lasers, but you have to know the frequency. Can't you do something about the terrible food we get?
Well, if people can afford to eat organic, they're going to do themselves a better favor, and not all of us can afford it or even have the time to search that out. What I've said earlier is, yes, the food pretty much is rather bad, but if we can figure out ways to defend our body against what's in food that hurts us, that may be an easier way than trying to perfect the food supply. I don't know how I could perfect the food supply, but I do know what I can do to help an old person grow younger.
But Jen raises a good point. We are going to have to figure out how to feed 10 billion, 12 billion, 20 billion mouths.
I'm telling you, there's so much overproduction with the food. Commodity prices have plunged. Agriculture efficiency has improved. Unfortunately, it's come at a cost of the quality of the food. So there are issues out there. I don't have a solution for every one of them. But what I do say is if we can get control over aging and if we can grow biologically younger, the younger people aren't having heart attacks, strokes, or cancers for the most part. That happens as we mature past age 40. That's when we start getting sick. So if we can reverse aging to a point where we're a biological 25 years of age, we can probably tolerate a lot more bad food than we can as we grow older.
And so that's the idea that you, even if you're 90, 100, you would be sort of held in it. You would be in this perpetual 25-year-old.
And reverse their cellular structure in such a way that they resemble a healthy 25-year-old. and they have all the incredible abilities to enjoy life and be energetic and not have the multiple health maladies. So, yes, our objective is to make old people grow younger, and we're seeing early results from clinical trials that we help support financially, and we encourage people to log on to our Age Reversal Network if they're interested, only if they're interested, and they can read about what we're doing. And if they want to see about studies that may be going on in their area, we can let them know, well, here's a doctor you can go to and participate if it sounds of something of interest.
In all seriousness, Bill, is there a lifespan, you know, a limitation for you? I mean, do you want to live, you know, 300-400 years? Do you want to live 10,000 years? Do you want to live forever?
Well, forever is what I want to do. I never find a day that doesn't intrigue me with something new and adventuresome. For me, it's immortality. Some people say they only want to live to be a certain age, but you know what? We've been doing this now for the last 42 years, and people who told me when they reached 90, that's as much as they wanted to go, now they've reached 90, and they're in pretty good shape. They want to go to 100, and I really suspect when they reach 100, they're going to be saying, can you give me another 10 years, Bill? So I think it's a matter of just perception, and once we reach that upper limit, we want more and not just to give up on it.
Aren't you curious, though, what might be on the other side?
You know, we use the term the other side to describe when they will find a cure for aging. Will we be alive to take advantage of that? I believe we have a chance of staying alive. If we're over 50 or 60, we still have a chance to take advantage of this incredible technology that's emerging at the prestigious universities that everyone puts their trust into at this point from the standpoint of legitimate scientific research. Well, they're doing this age reversal research and getting results in the laboratory models.
But what about the other side? I mean, the other side.
Oh, I try to comment on what I know about. I don't believe that there's much out there. That's just my personal belief. Doesn't mean it's real or not. But I know what's here. And I know we can look at someone's blood test results who's 80 years of age and they don't have long to live. And if they start to take care of themselves, they can improve that report card, that blood test result. In 6 months, they can be biologically younger. It's just a matter of intervening into their own aging process. We know we can do that.
Dan is in the great state of Maine. Dan, welcome to Coast AM.
How you doing? I never thought I'd call into a radio show, but...
Yet here you are.
Well, I was too compelled. I don't even know really much about the individual that's speaking. I just happen to be... I got tired of listening to music and...
Okay, just tell me how you feel about immortality, Dan. How would you like to live forever?
I wouldn't, but, you know, I just want to ask the gentleman speaking, because he seems to find the answers that he likes and goes off it, and he's looking towards the future so much that he hasn't looked towards the past. And I just got one recommendation if he likes to learn so much. Has he ever read Plato? In the age of Socrates, the only reason I called is when he talked about the old people. the brain does change, and of course you lose some, but the wisdom and the intelligence, and Socrates himself was in his 70s, and you're talking thousands of years ago. And if you look towards the history, I think you'll find the answer to the future. Technology is not the answer. Half the problems you have is because of technology.
I use history in my PowerPoint presentations all the time to show how technology has rapidly advanced in so many different areas. Telecommunications, 1980, to make a long-distance phone call. It was unaffordable to do during the middle of the day. And now we make long-distance phone calls for virtually free. And we've got all this incredible communications technology that's emerged in our lifetime. But we sometimes don't notice it. And I try to bring that to people's attention so they can understand once we translate that into biomedical sciences, people are going to live at least a lot longer, a lot healthier, and maybe forever.
All right, Dan, thank you for that. We've just got about 2 minutes here, Bill. At a certain point, we may be facing something like literally re-sleeving your consciousness or uploading your consciousness into a machine.
Yes.
The merging of man and machine. How do you feel about that?
I can't wait. I think that's going to be the ultimate solution. because our biological bodies have so many limitations. We all have little ailments here and there, and we have to work so hard to stay healthy. I can't wait till that technology emerges. It will around 2050, but if I don't do something about my aging process, I will unlikely be there. So our followers, and we do have an age reversal network of people. The website, by the way, is agereversalnetwork.com. And for people who think a little bit like I do, they're welcome to look at it. There's no registration or anything. Just see what we're doing. If it's something of interest, and that includes certainly the uploading of our brains into supercomputers that are backed up around the universe to give us perpetual existence.
All right. Well, in the meantime, people can also attend services in Fort Lauderdale at the Church of Perpetual Life. When do you meet?
We meet typically the third Thursday of every month. The church is actually located in Hollywood, Florida.
Ah, Hollywood, yes.
The Life Extension started in Fort Lauderdale. These are all separate entities, by the way. I set up entities to do specific work, and our Age Reversal Network is what is helping to fund the age reversal research in people.
Bill, a great pleasure. Thanks for hanging out with me for 2 hours.
It's fantastic. I appreciate the opportunity.
All right. When we come back, Andrew Collins, writer, historian, will join us from the United Kingdom, and we'll talk about new evidence showing that the earliest origins of human culture, religion, and technology derive from the lost world of a highly advanced race of giants from Siberia. Here's Foster the People. Sit next to me on Coast to Coast AM.